Welcome to For the Good of the Public podcast, an initiative by the Center for Christianity and Public Life, a nonprofit contending for the credibility of Christian resources in public life for the public good. You're listening to the first episode, The Spirit of Our Politics. We're your hosts. I'm Phoebe Meyer, Chief of Staff and Senior Advisor.
And I'm Michael Ware, Founder, President, and CEO.
We are so excited to kick off this first season of For the Good of the Public podcast. These talks that you are going to hear over the next several weeks are all talks that we hosted at our inaugural summit for the good of the public last year. Before we get into some of the content of the summit and the purpose behind the summit and why you're going to be hearing these topics over the next few weeks, I wanted to give you a little bit more context about our organization and the work that we do. At the Center for Christianity and Public Life, our mission is really tied to the conviction that we have that the fate of American democracy is tied to the character of Christianity in this country. And that's why our mission is to contend for the credibility of Christian resources in public life for the public good. We advance our mission through two streams of work that we believe need to run alongside each other and intersect with each other for the kind of civic renewal and healthier politics and public life that we want to see. These streams are Christian civic formation and public imagination. And under Christian civic formation, that's where we grow, support, convene, and represent the community of Christians who are convinced of the centrality of spiritual formation for civic renewal. And if you're someone who's listening in and those terms, spiritual formation or civic renewal, feel new to you, later on in the talk that you're going to hear today, you'll hear Michael describe more about those terms and concepts and what they mean. But under Christian civic formation, we have a young professionals network in Washington, D.C., with people in their 20s and early 30s who are working in politics. We have a public life fellowship for mid-career civic leaders. And we run a high school program in Washington, D.C., that's a week-long civic leadership program. Under public imagination, this is where we explain Christianity to the public and advance Christian resources for the good of the public. One of our key programs under our public imagination work is our summit. Michael, could you talk a little bit about the summit for the good of the public and why it is that the summit is so key to the work that we do?
That's right, Phoebe. The For the Good of the Public Summit provides an annual opportunity for us to bring together hundreds of civic and religious leaders to learn together and to consider what Christian resources might have to offer as we seek to build a healthier politics and public life. Over the course of 2 days, attendees heard from Pulitzer Prize finalists, United States senators, trailblazing nonprofit executives, inspiring activists, and other leaders. Attendees of our inaugural summit told us they gained critical knowledge and tools that they would use in their work. And they told us they left our summit with a greater confidence in how Christian resources can make a positive contribution in American life. And Phoebe, that's why I know we're so excited to bring this podcast to a wider audience, those who couldn't be with us in person last year, but that we want to be able to listen in and join us in this conversation about the future of Christianity and the future of American public life. And so I'm interested, Phoebe, there was so much that transpired over the course of those 2 days last year. What sticks out to you? What was the moment at our summit last year that has stuck with you since then?
Gosh, there were so many moments over the course of the summit, but the one that immediately comes to mind when you ask that question was actually the final panel of the summit. And this is probably I'm so excited for our listeners to get to hear this talk, but it was the final panel on the power of prayer. And we had our board chair, James Catford, and Chaplain Barry Black from the U.S. Senate, and C.C. Jones-Davis, who leads the Justice for Julius Jones campaign, talking about the fact that prayer has been essential for the work that they have done, and they have seen the power of prayer drastically change things. And I think that theme actually stands out just in reflecting back on the summit as a whole, because there was an energy in the room, and it was the spirit of the conversations on stage. I mean, we had people from different denominational backgrounds and political persuasions, and yet people came to listen and learn from each other. And they came because they believe things like prayer and forgiveness and gentleness and loving your enemies, that these are things that actually hold up in public life. And these are distinctly Christian values that are relevant to our politics. And at CCPL, we say that the kind of people that we are has much to do with the kind of politics that we have. And to be in a room with people who firmly believe that was really energizing and exciting. And I think that's something that makes the summit so unique.
Yeah, I also think the way the summit combines practitioners and intellectuals, the way that sort of the summit goes back and forth and even sort of on the same stage, there's discussion of very practical challenges related to child hunger, related to artificial intelligence, and resources of character and virtue and formation. It's a unique conversation. I think one that is needed. I don't know that there's a conversation that better reflected that than the conversation I was able to have with Gary Haugen, the founder, CEO of International Justice Mission. Gary is someone who has built respected, internationally respected human rights organization that does incredible sort of sector setting work on human trafficking, but also really violence. A part of that story has been the way that faith has been central to how he's built that organization and what International Justice Mission has become. I'm excited for folks to listen in on that conversation. I'll also point folks to a really moving, inspiring, informative set of remarks from Eboo Patel, my friend, the founder of Interfaith America. Eboo delivered remarks around what Christians can learn from Muslim theology. And I know I gained a great deal from it. I know that listeners will be inspired by what Eboo had to share. There were really just so many wonderful talks that I can't wait for folks to be able to listen in on.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Eboo's talk too, because I think one of the distinctives of our summit and of this podcast is that it's not just designed for Christians too. We do believe at the center that Christian values and resources should be offered as an act of loving service and not as an imposition. And we also know that Christians make up a large majority of the American public. And so civic leaders who don't share a Christian faith are still interested in what Christians are thinking about, what they care about, and how Christians are contributing to politics. And so our summit gave an opportunity for us to highlight a range of issues from criminal justice reform to artificial intelligence to child hunger and poverty as issues that Christians care about and that people should be paying attention to regardless of whether they have a personal faith conviction.
That's right. I mean, I think, right, it's this reciprocity. Civic leaders need to care about and should want to gain whatever they can from Christian resources, because they'll help them do their jobs better. They hold up in public life. Christians care about the public because they love and serve a God who cares for all people. And so that sets an environment in which I think a mutual, robust conversation can take place. That's certainly, Phoebe, what we saw at our first summit. I will say we're already and have been for some time planning for our next summit. And so part of our hope for this podcast is that your appetite will be whetted, and you'll want to join us in person in October 7th and 8th of 2024 for our second summit.
Michael, the first episode that we are dropping today is of the opening remarks that you gave at the summit, titled The Spirit of Our Politics. And I wonder, before listeners hear that conversation, can you give some insight into what people can expect to hear and why this conversation felt so essential to kind of set the framework for the whole summit?
Sure. Well, you know, I thought it was important to, I think there's such an expectation, often a negative one, to be honest, about what gatherings involving faith and politics and public life look like. And so first, I just wanted to set the tone and set an agenda for what we were seeking to accomplish during our time together. The second thing is, at the time, the talk offered a bit of a preview of my book, The Spirit of Our Politics, which is about the centrality of spiritual formation to civic renewal. And so you'll hear some of the core ideas of the book in this talk. The talk was also an invitation to a new conversation. And it's one that now, in this episode, what was originally, you know, intended for the several hundred folks in that room is now intended for you as well, to invite you into this conversation, to ask you to participate with us in thinking about what Christianity has to offer in this particular moment in our country, our country's history, the life of the church. And so I hope that you'll be energized by what I share in this talk, and we're certainly looking forward to sharing with you so much of what happened at our inaugural summit.
Thanks, Michael. And now we'll hear your opening talk, the opening talk from Michael Ware, President and CEO of the Center for Christianity and Public Life, titled The Spirit of Our Politics.
Welcome to For the Good of the Public, the Center for Christianity and Public Life's inaugural summit. CCPL is a nonpartisan nonprofit with the mission to contend for the credibility of Christian resources in public life for the public good. And this event is an expression of years of learning and experiences, dreaming and planning, and the fruit of partnerships with dozens of other organizations and leaders, including our wonderful sponsors. We have an exciting 2 days ahead, and you can scan the QR code on the back of your badge to get a sense of what's in store. But I just want to thank you for being here for what we believe is the start of something special. To say it's the start of something special, though, implies a key question. What exactly is this? And so I'll share my thoughts on that question. But in some ways, it's a question we'll answer together over the course of the next couple of days and in the months and years to come. Over these 2 days, you'll hear from a range of voices with different experiences and perspectives. Many are Christians who have ideas to offer that would serve the public. Others are doing work that Christians ought to know about and care deeply about and learn from. So I ask you to listen to what all of our speakers have to offer with open minds. I know that many of us have become calloused
by a culture that is just rampant with manipulation. But these next 2 days will provide an environment for you to think, to ponder, to plan, to dream about what our politics, what our public life could become. It's a place for you to think about the kind of person you're becoming and what you yourself have to offer to your neighbors and to our public life. We want to provide an environment for you to do that, but we won't try. We can't do that work for you. And we certainly don't think it wise to or effective to impose a particular vision on you. We are here to serve you. And we trust amazing things will happen when you place people oriented toward the public in an environment where they can learn new things and think new thoughts in community. I think there are two basic motivations that lead people to engage with our organization, including attending this summit. First, there are those who understand that the fate of our democracy is inextricably tied to the character of Christianity in this country. Some are civic leaders in positions of great influence. Many others hold the office of citizen. Some are Christians, but many are not. Some of you have taken the on-ramp of public service to get here. You're looking for resources wherever you can find them that can help you better serve those in your community. And you know that the challenges that face our nation demand that we draw on every good resource available to us. And so with expectation and curiosity, you're here to see how Christian resources might aid you as you seek to solve problems for the public. The second motivation is found among those of you who know how much politics and public life are affecting the life of the church. This includes, of course, the fact that politics affects all of our lives. Political decisions have consequences. But you also see how politics shapes us as people, how our political culture affects how we relate to one another in our families, our churches, our communities. And so you are here because you know that we need to think carefully about the kind of people we're becoming. And politics increasingly shapes and is shaped by the kind of people we are. Questions of politics and public life were never isolated from the more personal and congregational lives that we lead, but it is more apparent to many than ever before how foolish it would be to act as if our politics and public life was just something that happened out there. There are other motivations, perhaps. But these motivations of public service and Christian concern are distinct ones that nonetheless led all of us here together to the same place. If you truly care about politics, public policy, the health of our society, it would be negligent to not consider what Christians have to offer there. If you truly care about the flourishing of faith in the lives of individuals and churches, it would be negligent to not consider the ways in which we are shaped and influenced by our politics and public life. And so we're glad to have you here. We need you. The country needs you. We need you because the spirit of our politics is ailing. The spirit of our politics is the will of our politics. There was a time in which it was at least generally accepted in some corners to say that people all went to politics for the same ends, but we just pursued different means. We could talk about politics as competing visions of the good. Now, though, it is clear that many people are going to politics for other reasons. Religion and politics are the two topics you're not supposed to discuss at the dinner table, right? And there's a reason for that. Have you ever stopped to ask yourself why we embrace the saying? I've come to the conclusion that the saying is generally true, but for opposing reasons. People don't want to talk about politics because they hold their ideas too tightly. Too much of their identity is staked in politics. People don't want to talk about religion because they are haunted by the idea that they do not stake their lives in the spiritual things enough, that God takes up too little space in their life. In October of 2020, 15 scholars from a range of fields came together to issue a dire warning about the particular kind of polarization we have today, which they called political sectarianism. Political sectarianism is the, quote, tendency to adopt a moralized identification with one political group and against another. It is upheld by three pillars: othering, which is the tendency to view opposing partisans as essentially different or alien to oneself; aversion, the tendency to dislike and distrust opposing partisans; and moralization, the tendency to view opposing partisans as iniquitous, as sinful, as opposed to merely wrongheaded. What does political life look like when it runs on the fuel of aversion, othering, and a misplaced moralization? The scholars write, quote, out-party hate has become more powerful than in-party love as a predictor of voting behavior. This aversion to opposing partisans might make strategic sense if partisan identity served as a strong proxy for political ideas, the authors wrote. But given that sectarianism is not driven primarily by such ideas, holding opposing partisans in contempt on the basis of their identity alone precludes innovative cross-party solutions and mutually beneficial compromises. In other words, political hatred has become so profound that it outstrips many individuals' desire to actually help themselves, not to mention loftier motivations like pursue the common good. Political sectarianism is a state in which we hate our opponents so much we'll do harm to ourselves and our interests before we concede anything to them. And we see this, right? The public is losing its imagination for a politics that could be about public service. Politics is increasingly where you go to act out your loves and hatreds, your aspirations and disappointments, your fears and resentments. It's a forum for entertainment, what political scientist Eitan Hersh calls political hobbyism. Those who view politics this way are increasingly viewed as perceptive, as the ones who really get it, the ones who really care. To some, to view politics as a forum for service, for willing the good of your neighbor, is at best naive. And if this way of approaching politics grabs further hold, grows deeper roots without being countered, it will undermine local efforts to build bridges, support a healthy civic pluralism, create a more equitable future, advance justice, affirm human dignity. Christians have not just reflected and been influenced by the spirit of our politics, they've contributed to it. Christians have too often been drafted into our politics of contempt, the illusions and delusions of political idolatry. This must end. The nation has too much need, and Christianity has much to contribute to undermining the spirit of political sectarianism that is rising today. We have too much to offer. In a nation suffering an epidemic of loneliness, we need a revival of generous hospitality. In a nation that prides itself on what it can produce and its efficiencies, we need to remember the dignity of work and our responsibility to protect it. In a nation where there's a crisis of meaning and belonging, we need a resurgence of service. In a nation where we too often turn to violence, we need a renewed imagination for turning swords into plowshares. In a nation struggling to build an inclusive, pluralistic democracy, we need the will to bear one another's burdens. In a nation divided, we need the vision to make friends of enemies, the confidence to love those who are not yet friends. In a nation where too many go unseen, unrecognized, and dehumanized, we need to recover the idea that all are made in the image of God, every human being with dignity that should be respected. It is a serious thing, C.S. Lewis wrote, to live in a society of possible gods and goddesses. To remember that the dullest and most uninteresting person you talk to may one day be a creature which, if you saw it now, you would be strongly tempted to worship, or else a horror and a corruption such as you now meet, if at all, only in a nightmare. All day long, we are, in some degree, helping each other to one or other of these destinations. It is in light of these overwhelming possibilities, it is with the awe and the circumspection proper to them that we should conduct all our dealings with one another, all friendships, all loves, all play, all politics. This is not mere rhetoric. This is knowledge. Knowledge of what is real. Knowledge that has fueled social change. Knowledge that has grounded people like Fannie Lou Hamer and Dorothy Day, Richard Allen and George Fox, Thurman and Niebuhr Bauman and Vivian Palau and Gerson. This evening, we'll honor Tim Keller and Sister Norma Pimentel, two people whose civic contribution is a reflection of their knowledge of who God is and the call God had for their lives. They were formed by Christian resources, and it was their spiritual formation that contributed to civic renewal. T.S. Eliot once described the current human endeavor as that of seeking to find a system of order so perfect that men and women will no longer have to be good. We want to pursue a system so perfect that we no longer have to be good. But along with Eliot, we believe that this is a fool's errand. I think there is an assumption about Washington, D.C., that because it is such a center of power, that people here think that they have all of the answers. And while certainly there are some who are oblivious enough to think that is the case, my experience has led me to a different conclusion, one that many others know to be true, even if they have not articulated it themselves or are worried about its implications. The truth is that while I know public policy is important and systems matter, the state of our politics is in the end a reflection of the state of our souls. And we know this. Civic leaders in the room, your work bumps up against this all the time. Pastors, your work bumps up against this all of the time. There is no getting around the kind of people we are. This is the beauty of democracy. This is the weakness of democracy. The kind of people we are has much to do with the kind of public life and politics that we will have. And so therefore, spiritual formation, the process of shaping the human character, including those aspects of character which relate to civics and the public, spiritual formation is central to civic renewal. Now look, we all know as we look ahead to 2024, there will be challenges. These can be high tide moments for a no holds barred politics of contempt. We can worry about the spirit of our politics in less consequential times, we tell ourselves. But it's exactly in times like this that character and culture are shaped. It's exactly in times like this that we decide what really matters. And so I want to invite you to commit with me over these next 2 days to something different. Let us commit here to reject the politics of hatred, which is steadily curdling into a kind of self-hatred. May the motivations of the deepest parts of ourselves lead us out beyond mere self-interest and our own entertainment and toward our neighbor, toward the public. May we commit ourselves over these next 2 days to stewarding what we have in community with one another for the good of the public. The spirit of our politics is a reflection of the state of our souls. We could change our politics. We can do something about it, something real about it. We can not only act differently, we can not only shift our sights, we can become a different kind of people. We can become the kind of people our politics needs for the good of the public. So we are so happy to have you here with us. It's an honor to serve you, to serve with you. Thank you. I hope you enjoy the next 2 days. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the For the Good of the Public podcast, an initiative of the Center for Christianity and Public Life. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast so you don't miss an episode. CCPL is a donor-supported nonprofit. Visit our website at ccpubliclife.org to learn how you can partner with us and connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Our hosts for today's episode are CCPL founder and CEO Michael Ware, and myself, Chief of Staff and Senior Advisor, Phoebe Meyer. Our podcast is produced by Glowfire Creative and Liminal Podcasts. Our in-studio recording engineer is Conrad Ossie Poets. Our podcast editor is Seth Creekmore. And our theme music is Lamb's Farm by Sam Barsh.
Phoebe, I know one of our hopes for listeners of the For the Good of the Public podcast is that they might become attendees of the For the Good of the Public Summit in Washington, D.C. later this fall on October 7th and 8th in Washington, D.C. Phoebe, for those who want to join us and attend the summit in person, what can they expect?
Well, if you've been listening to this podcast, you know what to expect better than anyone else. But in all seriousness, you will hear from a group of thinkers, practitioners, and decision makers on issues of public importance. But you'll actually get to experience the talks and the conversations that you're hearing on this podcast in community with other people, with publicly minded leaders, with people who are doing this work on the ground, with people who are curious about the role that faith plays in public life. And I love this quote that we received from one of last year's attendees that I think really embodies the feel of the summit. They said, quote, "About an hour into summit, I exhaled a breath I didn't know I was holding in. I didn't know how long I'd been holding it, but somewhere between the speakers and the overall tenor of the event, I relaxed in a way that you only do when you're home." And I think attendees will get to exhale a breath and will feel a real sense of community and kindred spiritness with other attendees.
Phoebe, folks can get their tickets to join us at ccpubliclife.org/summit. We would love for you to join us October 7th through the 8th, 2024 in Washington, D.C. We'll see you at For the Good of the Public.